This episode of Alone is brought to you by the 99-cent new domain registration with the GoDaddy coupon code CJCSiglerC. A new .com domain for just 99 cents? Yes! And that is 93% off the normal price. Use the coupon code CJCSiglerC at GoDaddy.com and you can reserve that domain name for your business, your hobby, your band, your art, your family name, or lock up the first name, last name .com for your child before some other punks reserve it for their punk kids. That's the GoDaddy code CJCSiglerC for 99-cent domain registration. And if you know anyone who needs a website, anyone who builds websites, send them that code and a link to scottsigler.com/GoDaddy, where there are other coupon codes that will save them moolah. And now, on with our story.
Welcome to the serial audiobook Alone, an unabridged podcast of Book 3 of the Generations Trilogy. Written by Scott Sigler. Performed by A. Kovacs. This novel is available in print as an ebook or as a full-length unabridged audiobook. For links to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Audible, please visit scottsigler.com/alone.
Hello, junkies! Yep, we're already three episodes in to Alone. Man, the weeks just fly by, don't they? It seems like the 11 years I've been podcasting have gone by. 12 years now. Shoot. Gone by so friggin' fast, it's a blur. Currently, I am working on the novel Mount Fitzroy, which is the sequel to Earthcore. I am 53,000 words into Mount Fitzroy. That is about 163 paperback pages. I have completed 18 chapters to first draft form. 9 more chapters to go just to get out of the first act. So I have no idea how big this novel will be, but it'll probably wind up being girthy. I also have no idea when the first draft will be done, which means no idea in publication date, so don't bother asking. But I will tell you the book is moving along very well. It ties in nicely with the Siglerverse, so there will be some very cool Easter eggs for you if you are a hardcore junkie. Yes, 3 episodes into Alone already. Man, just zooming by. Let's get you caught up on the story, and then we will tiptoe through the tulips. Previously on Alone. No birthday children died in M's battle against the belligerents, but several were wounded, M included. Her wound needs attention, as does her heart as she reunites with Bishop. But not all reunions are pleasant. M must confront Bello and get critical information before it's too late.
Four. The hospital is busy. It's in the observatory's second layer. Everything here is white. The pedestals, the cabinets, the walls, the floor, and the coffins. 66 of them, to be exact, laid out side by side in 2 rows of 33 each. Smith, Lucky Pocano, and Francine Yilmaz, our 3 circle crosses, are hard at work fixing the cuts and scrapes suffered during the battle. 10 circle stars are being treated. So are 7 springers. Our docs have gotten good at fixing them up as well. Smith stands at a pedestal next to a closed coffin that holds Bawden. Lucky is working on Farrar, who had a long cut on his arm. Farrar hid the wound from everyone, like he always seems to do. Francine leans in close to my face, dabbing at my cut with something that stings. 3 hours in the med chamber will fix you right up, she says. No scar at all. The circle crosses call them med chambers. The rest of us still call them what they are. Coffins. Finding new words for things doesn't change what they actually are. Just stitch it up, I say. I've got work to do. Francine sighs. She's tiny. She's barely grown at all since we landed. She's filled out some, though, and has a woman's curves. She has the cutest little nose. Long black lashes frame her big dark eyes. The grown-ups dressed us like dolls. Francine actually looks like one. Em, all your scars, we can get rid of those. You'd be so much prettier without them. I smile at her. She means well, but she doesn't understand me. My scars are mine. Each one makes me look a little bit different from Matilda's ideal vision. In the faraway crawl spaces of my thoughts, I hope that if Matilda ever does overwrite me, she will hate her own face because of all the damage I have done to it. Thank you, I say. I appreciate your concern. Now stitch me up. Francine does as she's told. 14 quick, efficient stitches on my cheek, and she's finished. I thank her again, then walk over to Smith. Icons and lines float above the pedestal in front of her. Information I now know represents heart rate, blood pressure, temperature, oxygen saturation, and a few other things. How's Bawden? I ask. She needs 2 days in there, Smith says. 3 tops, and she'll be as good as new. Then you can take her out into the jungle again and see if you can get her properly killed instead of just horribly wounded. Smith annoys me, but I understand her. Her job is to repair people, to save lives. My job is to protect people, but sometimes the only way to do that is to kill those that would harm us. When evil comes, you can't always talk to it. Sometimes it must be destroyed. That's why there are people like Bawden, Victor, Bishop, me, D'Souza. When real danger comes, people like Smith stay behind us. I wish we didn't have to fight, I say, trying to reason with Smith for the 100th time. I wish no one attacked us. I wish the jungle was nicer. I wish air tasted like candy and we all got to sleep on a bed of pretty flowers. I try to reason with her, sure, but I don't try hard. Smith snorts. One of these days, you're going to bring me somebody I can't fix. Then we'll see how funny it is. You think I like this? I hate fighting. She glances at me. Her mouth twists into a rueful grin. No, you don't like it. You revel in it. She points to my cheek. You revere it so much, you want to show it off. I was made to heal. You? You were made to kill. You are death. The voice of the boy I love comes from behind me.
Someone has to be death, Bishop says. That's how civilization works. What you can't defend will eventually be taken away from you.
Smith rolls her eyes. If the two of you don't mind, I've got lives to save. She turns her attention back to the pedestal display. Maybe I'm the leader of my people, but I've just been dismissed. I leave the hospital. I hear Bishop walking behind me, but I don't turn to look at him. I walk down the stone hall and descend a flight of stairs before I stop. We're alone. Now I turn. I haven't seen his face in 10 days. That tightly curled blonde hair. Those dark yellow eyes, lovely but bleary from lack of sleep. As tired as he looks, his smile still steals the air from my lungs.
I missed you, Bishop.
His hands slide around my waist. He lifts me as if I weigh nothing at all. I throw my arms around his thick neck, his lips on mine. Warm, eager, wanting. Maybe the kiss lasts for a second. Maybe it lasts for an hour. He sets me down.
And I missed you.
His hand on my face, his thumb gently tracing my latest badge of bravery. His eyes swim with a mixture of worry and pride.
Looks like I almost lost you.
I touch the hand that is touching my face.
Never. You'll never lose me.
Not like I lost O'Malley.
I still think it's a bad strategy for you to go out and fight, he says. You're our leader. If the blade that made that cut had struck true, you'd be dead.
He's proud of me, yes, but this particular argument he will never let go.
I can't ask others to do what I won't do myself, and it went well. If it wasn't for Baudin rushing into the fight, no one in my unit would have been hurt at all. Bishop's face wrinkles with surprise.
Baudin? But she's so reliable.
I shake my head. She lost it. She jumped out of the spider, screaming that she wanted to kill. She ran into a burning cornfield without any support. Victor and I had to go in after her. Bishop rubs his chin. I hear his calloused hands scraping against his blonde stubble.
That's happening more and more, he says. Our discipline seems to be fading. I'm worried about it.
I nod. I am, too.
Still, she can't act like that, Bishop says. It's unacceptable. I'll speak with her.
I wouldn't want to be in her shoes when that happens. Among the Circle Stars, disobeying orders is a heavy sin.
And what about Victor? How did he do?
The way Bishop said Victor's name, with a touch of anger? There seems to be a growing rivalry between the pair. Bishop prides himself on being our best fighter, so I guess it's no surprise, considering how skilled Victor is becoming at all things involving war.
He was amazing, I say. He saved Baudin's life, probably mine as well. He captured two belligerents, killed another.
Bishop's jaw muscles twitch. He nods.
Where are the prisoners now?
I describe what I saw in the Springer City, how Barkha acted. Bishop's face clouds over with anger.
It's dishonorable to kill captives, he says.
I know. I tried to bring the prisoners with us, but Barkha wouldn't listen. The way he's been acting lately, I couldn't risk confrontation when we were so heavily outnumbered. Bishop nods slowly.
The Springers are acting more violent. We're acting more violent. The belligerents gather out of nowhere to attack us. I don't understand what's going on.
I take his hand. We'll figure it out. You look exhausted. Anything big happen while I was gone? Just as it was important for people to see me lead the attack on the belligerents, it was important for people to know Bishop can run things if anything happens to me. That's why I left him in charge.
Only the biggest thing there is, he says. Spingate says the first alien ship is approaching orbit, or something like that.
We have no idea where it came from. We have no idea what's inside of it.
I'll go see her right now, I say. Anything else?
He looks away.
Bello tried suicide again. She somehow managed to chip off a piece of her cell wall, used it to cut her wrists.
That damn woman. Why does she have to be so much trouble?
The Springers kill their prisoners. Our prisoner tries to kill herself.
I'll go talk to her, I say. Bishop gives me that look, the one that says, I told you this would happen.
If she succeeds on the next try, any information she has dies with her.
I feel my anger flare.
For the last time, we are not going to torture her.
His eyes narrow.
She's the only one who knows why those ships are coming. Now the first one is here. This is necessary.
I rub at my temples. This is giving me a headache.
No torture, Bishop. You always listen to Spingate, he says. She agrees with me that it's the right thing to do. No! All right? No torture, and that's final. Don't ask again.
He grunts, then nods. It isn't just Spingate and Bishop. Many people think we should get the information out of Bello by... Wait, what's the phrase people use to justify this disgusting concept? Oh yes, by any means necessary. While I'm in charge, that will never happen.
I'll talk to Bello first, then Spin, I say. Then I need some sleep. Will I see you at our house later tonight?
Our house. His and mine. The thought of a night in our place, where I don't have to think about any of this, where I can just be with him, it lifts my mood. Bishop smiles.
shakes his head.
You can't go home yet. Borjigin called that meeting.
Borjigin said you called the meeting. He blinks a few times.
Oh, that's right. I called it.
What's it about? I just got back from battle. I'm exhausted. I don't want to sit in some damn meeting right now.
You're going, Bishop says. You'll understand when you get there. Go to the Grand Hall after you see Spingate. Just do it, Em. It's important.
He kisses me again. When he finally walks away, I feel like part of me goes with him. Tonight I will allow myself time to relax. Now, though, there is much work still to do. Spingate's lab is below me. Our prison cells are above. I head up the steps. Five. I stand with a metal tray in my hands. Warmth billows out from between the iron bars of Corinne Bellow's cell. She's naked, lying on a straw mat on the floor. 2 months ago, she tried to hang herself with her blankets, tying them together and looping them over the thick wooden support beam that runs across the ceiling. 1 month ago, she tried to strangle herself with her coveralls. We don't have enough people to watch her all the time, so we had to take away anything she could use to hurt herself. That includes clothes, which is why we keep it so warm in her cell. She knows I'm here. She won't look up at me. Her frizzy blonde hair hides her face. Her skin is so pale.
Bishop told me what you did, I say.
My tone is harsh. As my people struggle and sacrifice, fight to build a new culture, to survive, this selfish woman tries to take her own life instead of helping us. I do have some sympathy for her, just not very much. Kill me, she says. Her voice is a low moan, a whisper of the pain that crawls up from deep in her soul. That's what you're good at, isn't it, Em? Killing? She's trying to make me angry. I won't let her. I brought you tea.
Stop calling it that. Acha isn't tea. Real tea is amazing. You'll never know what it tastes like.
Of all the things she complains about, and there are too many things to count, she mentions a lack of tea more than any other.
It's better than nothing, I say.
Finally, she looks up at me. This 1,000-year-old thing wears the face and body of my dead friend. Her nose is slightly crooked. Her left eyelid droops, always a little lower than her right. The imperfections of her face are mementos of my rage, when I flew out of control on the shuttle and beat her nearly to death. Just looking at her is an endless reminder of why I work so hard to stay calm. I can hurt people. I am capable of evil. She glances at the tray. 2 cups? You must want to talk. I nod. Corinne sighs.
She stands and walks to the bars.
She reaches through and takes one of the paper cups. She stares at it. I don't deserve at least a ceramic mug?
We both know what you'd use that for.
But it gets cold so fast.
Then drink quickly.
I take the other cup and set the metal tray on the stone floor, making sure it's well out of her reach. We found the paper cups in one of the observatory's countless storerooms. I take a sip of Acha. It tastes like wood. Not in a bad way, though. Wood and mint. The Springers drink this all the time. At first, I hated it, but I've come to like it. Disgusting, she says after taking a sip. She shrugs. At least it's warm. Thank you. She glances at the palm plate just outside her cell, on my side of the bars.
Now that we've had a nice drink, how about you let me go for a walk? All I have to do is press my hand to the plate. Spingate programmed the prison cell doors to open only for me, Bishop, or Borjigin. But now is not the time for a casual stroll.
The first alien ship is almost here, I say. Stop playing games, Corinne. Tell me why the Zolotl came to Omiokin.
I used to call her Bello, which I hated, because that was the name of my friend. At some point, she asked me to call her by her first name. I should be careful what I wish for. Calling her Corinne makes this monster seem like a real person. She's not. She is one of them.
You know my demands, she says. Till you meet them, I won't tell you anything. I am sure you fixed the antenna. I am sure of it.
Other than carefully supervised walks, where her hands remain shackled for fear she might try to grab a guard's knife or gun, Corinne has spent every moment of the last year in this cell. In all that time, she has refused to give us the information we need so badly.
I've always told you the truth about the antenna, I say. We're trying to fix it, trying very hard. But that doesn't matter anymore. Didn't you hear me? The alien ship is here. Tell me what I need to know so I can protect us.
She shrugs. Then find another way to reach the Zolotl. Until I can speak to my friends, I won't tell you a goddamn thing. Corinne Bello lifts one hand, palm out towards me so I can see the long, angry cuts on her wrist.
You're running out of time, she says. Sooner or later, I'll find a way to kill myself. Or maybe before I can, the aliens will attack and do it for me. If you want to know what I know, find a way.
I tried not to let her make me mad, but like every time before this one, I failed. Corinne Bello knows why the Zolotl came to this spot. Whatever that reason is, I assume it's the same thing that drew the Springers. The alien ship almost in orbit, and the two alien ships still on the way. There are more mysteries she could solve for us. What happened on the Zolotl that left so many people dead? Was Matilda really responsible for all those dismembered bodies? Who erased Zimbal's memory and the memory of Omatiotl, the control room's powerful computer? But Corinne refuses to talk until she can speak with her friends. Until she can speak with Matilda.
I promise you, I'm doing everything I can to fix that antenna, I say.
Please, tell me why the Zolotl came here. What is it about this place that makes people want to kill and destroy? She takes a long sip of Acha.
Until I get what I want, you'll never know, she says. I am so alone. And there it is, the phrase she always repeats, the one that sends me into a fury.
You don't have to be lonely. I've told you that you can be one of us. All you have to do is tell me what you know.
You don't understand, she says. You can't. You're all children, babies. I need my people. It was never supposed to be this way.
Gods, she makes me so angry. Some of the others want to torture you to get the information. Those words slip out before I realize I'm saying them.
I yelled at Bishop for bringing it up, yet here I am, letting my anger take over, using torture as a threat. She glances at my legs. At the knife strapped to my right thigh.
Damn.
I meant to come here unarmed, but the knife is always on me and I forgot about it. But Corinne isn't threatened by my words or by the knife. She laughs.
You think you can beat it out of me?
Little girl, you don't even know what real pain is.
Being transformed is worse than anything. Worse than the rod. Worse than when you assaulted me in the shuttle. Worse than when Spingate elbowed me after you stabbed Yong. Worse than when I cut myself, when I tried to hang myself. You want to torture me? Go ahead. I'm tougher than all of you. My skin prickles with goosebumps. My anger disappears.
What did you just say?
She casually takes another sip. I said I'm tougher than all of you.
No, I say, shaking my head. Before that, about when Yang got stabbed.
Corinne nods. Yes, when I grabbed Spingate to try and get her off of Yang, and she threw her arm back and elbowed me in the face.
I don't think she meant to.
The naked girl slash woman blinks. She touches her mouth, so lightly, in the spot where Spingate's elbow connected. It connected with that mouth, but not that person.
You weren't there, I say. That was our Bello.
Our Bello, who was overwritten shortly after that. The creature that took over her mind shouldn't have any recollection of that moment.
This Bello, this overwritten thing.
She's suddenly confused. She shakes her head lightly.
No, I don't know what I was saying. I must be thinking of when you beat me on the shuttle. Yes, that's it.
When O'Malley was overwritten, his brain, his soul, everything that made him, him, was supposed to be gone forever. But when I stabbed him, when he was dying in my arms, he smiled at me. He thanked me. In that brief instant, my O'Malley was still in there. And if Corinne remembers the moment of Yong's death, maybe my Bello isn't completely gone. Brewer said the longer we were awake, making our own memories, the less chance the overwrite would work. I've been awake far longer than Bello or O'Malley was. If Matilda ever catches me, tries to overwrite me, what would happen? Corinne sets her cup on the floor. She lies on the mattress, turns her back to me.
I'm tired, she says. Go away.
I can't stand to look at her anymore. Such a selfish, hateful little creature.
If this is what 1,000 years of life would get me, I hope I die at 100.
She rolls over onto one elbow and smiles at me. When she does, I see the dark space of 2 missing teeth. Another memento of when I attacked her. She refuses to have them fixed.
The aliens are finally here, she says, which means you'll die far sooner than that.
Her words send a chill up my spine and crank my anger to new heights. I walk away, wondering how the person I keep naked and alone in a prison cell continues to have the upper hand.
That was episode 3. To torture or not to torture? That is the question. And M is faced with that question, which is ripped straight out of modern day issues. Is it okay to torture people if it benefits the greater good? Is it okay to torture people if it potentially protects other people, particularly your people? Well, that is a debate that continues to rage on, not just in America, but all over the world. Also, what did you think about Bello? It's a converted grown-up right in the midst of the birthday children. I wonder what would it feel like to be over 1,000 years old, surrounded by only teenagers? That would be an interesting situation. If you have any thoughts on those issues, the torture issue, or what it would feel like to be 1,000 years old surrounded by teenagers, feel free to go to scottsigler.com. Find Lone episode number 3 and tell me what you think in the comments. I would love to see your information or feedback there. That is it for this week. Oh, I almost forgot. Are you a listener of Story Smack? We just put out an episode about Chinatown, which is hailed as the greatest screenplay ever written by several knowledgeable experts. Ariel Girl and I dive into that. Our review of Chinatown and that script for Story Smack is right below Alone, episode number 3 at scottsigler.com, or pop on over to scottsigler.com/podcast/Chinatown and you can get it, or it's in your feed if you're listening to this on iTunes or another RSS feed. The Chinatown episode is right below the Alone episode 3 episode that you are listening to right now. Whew, that was a mouthful. And now that's it for this week. We will be back next week with Alone episode number 4. And until then, I will talk to you all real soon.
You have been listening to Alone, book 3 in the Generations trilogy. Written by Scott Sigler. Performed by A. Kovacs. Produced by Scott Sigler and engineered by Steve Rickyberg. Follow Scott on Twitter and Instagram, where his handle is at Scott Sigler, ScottSigler, one word, or join our Facebook group at facebook.com/Scott Sigler. Theme music is the song Unseen Horrors by Kevin MacLeod.